wrong. Hello, Ma. I'd like to hear a new beat on the request line.
Okay, you got it. Coming up.
Der Begriff Dubstep bezeichnet eine neue Musikrichtung aus London. In der folgenden Stunde geht es um Dubstep. Was ist Dubstep? Woher kommt Dubstep? Und vor allem, wie hört sich Dubstep an? Am Mikrofon ist Markus Mark. Guten Abend. Dubstep ist mir erstmals Ende 2004 aufgefallen. Damals, kurz nach dem Tod der Radiolegende John Peel, gab es im Rahmen unzähliger Tribute-Shows auf der BBC auch eine Peel-Session eines Londoner Projektes, das sich Digital Mystics nennt. Schon zu Lebzeiten hatte John Peel hin und wieder Musik von Digital Mystics in seinen Programmen eingebaut. Angekündigt wurde Digital Mystics zwar als Repräsentant der Grime-Szene, mit Grime hatte die Session aber nicht viel zu tun. Stattdessen hörte man langsame, Dub-inspirierte und bassgeladene Stücke, die nahezu vollständig auf Vocals verzichteten. Unterstrichen wurde der Dub-Bezug dadurch, dass das erste Stück von Augustus Pablo kam. Erst danach gab es richtigen Dubstep. Und mich faszinierte dieser reduzierte Sound, den man ohne Bass nicht genießen kann, sofort. Dubstep wurde erstmals im Juli 2002 verwendet. Damals fasste das Musikmagazin Accelerator eine Reihe von Interviews und Artikeln unter diesem Begriff zusammen. In einer kurzen Einleitung erklärten die Autoren, dass der Einfluss jamaikanischer Soundsystem-Kultur schon seit Jahrzehnten aus der britischen Musikszene nicht wegzudenken ist. Immer wieder tauchen neue Facetten auf, die sich teilweise zu eigenständigen Stilrichtungen entwickeln. So entwickelte sich Jungle in den 90er Jahren vor allem aus Dub, Reggae und Breakbeats. Ende der 90er entstand eine etwas langsamere und schlankere Spielart, die wegen ihrer Hauseinflüsse als UK Garage oder auch Two-Step bezeichnet wurde. Viel zu früh wurde diese Musik von allen Medien und der Industrie aufgegriffen und ausgesaugt. Jedes Label brauchte auf einmal eine eigene UK Garage Compilation, einen eigenen Künstler und möglichst zu jedem Hit auch einen UK Garage Remix. Der Hype war schnell vorüber und während schon niemand mehr von UK Garage sprach, entwickelten sich unbehelligt von Medien und Industrie zwei neue Nachfolger, Grime und Dubstep. In der Grime-Szene ersetzte man vor allem die House-Einflüsse durch Hip-Hop, während die Beats nicht so sehr verändert wurden. Es entstand ein energiegeladener, hektischer Sound mit meist aggressiven, sehr schnellen Raps. Im Gegensatz dazu verzichteten die Dubstep-DJs nahezu vollständig auf Raps. Stattdessen perfektionierten sie die Beats, reduzierten sie auf das Wesentliche und legten vor allem Wert auf einen ordentlichen Bass. Die Haupteinflüsse waren Jungle, Dub und Two-Step, daher also auch der Name Dubstep. Fest verankert wurde dieser Begriff aber nicht durch den Artikel im Accelerator Mitte 2002, sondern erst zwei Jahre später, als das Label Temper eine Mix-CD mit dem Titel Dubstep All-Stars veröffentlichte. Ich habe Rob Ellis aus Bristol, besser bekannt unter dem Künstlernamen Pinch, nach seiner Definition von Dubstep gefragt.
Okay, it's hard to describe in some senses because, I mean, you can look at the actual music and you can say, okay, it sounds a little bit like this, or it sounds a little bit like this style and draws from these genres. But really, it's about a certain feeling and a certain vibe that comes, that makes something dubstep. I mean, you can look at it and analyze it and say, okay, well, what's the difference between this track and, say, a two-step garage track or a breakbeat track? And it's in the vibe of the movement of the tune. But to someone who's never heard it before and wants to know what it sounds like, the best answer I can give, really, is it's, for me, it's a kind of a deep variation, a tribal variation on garage music, which is where you get the kind of the swing that comes in the rhythms. It's not so rigid. It's got a lot of the similar kind of sound palette as jungle or drum and bass, dub, techno, these kind of genres. It shares a palette of sounds, but the way those sounds are organized, the way they move, is what makes it dubstep. And it's a certain vibe. It's a kind of low slung skanking vibe. It's a late night, hazy eyed, reefer hanging off your lower lip. It's a lot of bass in your face, shaking your stomach and your chest plate. That's what dubstep is.
Soweit die Definition von Pinch aus Bristol. Der Ursprung der Dubstep-Szene liegt aber in London. Martin Clark ist ein DJ und Journalist und beobachtet schon seit Jahren die Grime- und Dubstep-Szene. Ihn habe ich gefragt, wie Dubstep entstanden ist.
Dubstep evolved out of UK garage, which itself evolved out of either jungle and US garage. And you can trace all these roots all the way back to like to Acid House and the beginning of all that. So I guess the earliest points where you can say it's definitely beginning to be dubstep and it's definitely not UK garage is around 2000, when people like LB and Steve Gurley and Zed Bias began making darker garage, UK garage with a darker flavor. So if you want to see a real pivot between what is UK garage and what is dubstep, as in terms of the way it's divided, if you can look at the productions of Groove Chronicles, which were definitely a garage act, but they had some darkness to them, and then Ghost. And Ghost was LB's project. And so Groove Chronicles is 99, and they had a track called 1999, and that was definitely the two-step swing. But when they split up, and LB formed Ghost in 2000, and brought much of a darker vibe and a more dub influence to it. They're the beginning of Ghost recordings, Ghost 1, 2, and 3, and particularly the Dancehall EP was one of the very, very first productions by Ghost in Garage to start using overt dub samples. And so, yeah, as one track or one record, I'd definitely suggest looking for Ghost's Dancehall EP on Ghost recordings as an example of when things were definitely different to UK Garage and dubstep was starting to evolve. We'll be right back.
gerade das Stück Express von der soeben von Martin Clark erwähnten Dancehall-EP von Ghost. Deutlich hört man noch den Einfluss von UK Garage, aber wie Martin Clark schon sagte, findet man hier schon erste Dub-Elemente. Diese Herangehensweise wurde von anderen Projekten aufgegriffen und verfeinert. Sie versuchten den Sound etwas düsterer zu machen und teilweise auf die Garage-Vocals zu verzichten. Dazu nochmal Pinch aus Bristol.
It's always hard to pinpoint a moment because there's never a moment. Something happens in trends and there's a movement in sound. And I think really you can look at a lot of kind of two-step producers. You can credit people like Zed Bias and you can credit people who've kind of come from that side of two-step and they took it darker and they took it a bit more bassy. And they got rid of the vocals and not completely, but you know, they just moved the vibe of the scene. But really, for me, the first people making dubstep is Horsepower. Horsepower were the ones who took it really from the two-step, and they gave it a lot of the influences that dubstep has now, a lot of the kind of Eastern and Oriental kind of sound palettes and samples and all these things. They were the first ones to use that in this kind of context.
It's tune exclusive, man. Import, man. Straight from J to me.
But Larry, somebody must have skank you, man. Because I man tell you I hear them tune there. I go 2 years, you know.
What you talk about? It's only three I deal with, you know. Three release, man.
So what? When that release? Pre-war?
It's a serious business to deal with now, you see. It's tune exclusive to me, you understand?
And this ganja here, exclusive to I. Importing, straight from Jam now.
Cha, what happened, song, man?
Hey, Frankie, what's that, man? You need to cut that.
Let it tune for the song, man, yeah?
Cha.
Mit Fat Larry's Skank aus ihrem ersten, 2002 erschienenen Album In Fine Style. Natürlich reicht es nicht, wenn einzelne Projekte an einem neuen Sound tüfteln. Damit dieser Sound wachsen kann, brauchen sie eine Plattform. Diese Plattform konnte damals vor allem der Plattenladen Big Apple Music im Londoner Stadtteil Croydon anbieten. Hier konnte man die Platten kaufen und andere DJs treffen, die den gleichen Sound mögen. Einer der Gründer von Big Apple war Hatcher. Und scheinbar sind sich alle darin einig, dass Hatcher eine Art Godfather des Dubstep ist. Dazu nochmal Pinch.
And then you had DJs, you had Hatcher, who really helped shape the sound from the kind of two-step transition. And he was championing producers like Benger and Scream, Loafer, Mystics. He had these guys on an exclusive lockdown. No one else had their beats, no one had access to their beats. And he would construct these very instrumental, very deep, minimal sets from these producers. And in taking stuff that they did and a side of what they did and focusing on that in his own kind of purest look at things, there was this kind of sound that kind of emerged from that. I mean, there was other people as well involved, obviously, people like Code 9, and, you know, there was other DJs representing the sound, but Hatcher was really credited for being the one who took things and represented a Croydon sound, a very South London kind of thing.
Music gehört nicht nur der Plattenladen, sondern auch das gleichnamige Label, auf dem seit 2002 insgesamt 7 Maxis erschienen sind. Das Logo von Big Apple Music ist kein Apfel, sondern eine Banane. Und wir hören aus der vierten Maxi gerade das Stück Pathways von Digital Mystics. Hatcher ist nicht der einzige DJ, der als Godfather des Dubstep gehandelt wird. Ein anderer Name, der immer wieder fällt, ist Code 9. Dazu Mary Ann Hobbs von BBC Radio 1.
I mean, another one of the Godfathers who's really responsible, really, really influential producer, obviously is Code 9 as well. It's such an innovator to this day, and again, a huge influence. You know, if you talk to the likes of Vexed or Burial, you know, obviously Code 9's new protege, none of these people would be producing the beats that they are today without Code, not at all. I mean, and he's the most extraordinary producer in that you really never know what's around the next corner with him, and his beats will take your breath away, literally. They make all the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. I mean, they're just amazing. And that's the beauty of Code, that you really never know what's around the next corner with him at all. You just have got no idea where he will travel to next sonically. And he's brilliant. And yeah, he's absolutely key in terms of, you know, in Godfather terms. But Hatch is hilarious. They're almost like chalk and cheese as well. You know, they're a real yin and yang of the scene, because Hatch is a proper... If you get in a car with Hatch, you know, he'll be handbrake turns around every corner, wheel spinning off the traffic lights. He's a proper boy, you know what I mean? Whereas Code is very much more sort of ethereal and considered and mysterious, you know. Hatch is a lad in the very realist British sense, you know.
In France, I skin a man. Die of a big disease. Valiclinium. By chance, him girlfriend, she find an eagle. She end up the same way. Back a yard, 17 years old boy Pitney. Them call themselves the disciples. High and shooting a gun. Hurricane Annie rip out the ceiling of the church and kill everybody inside. Turn on the TV and all the earbuds.
Sign of the Dub von Code 9. Und wenn auch schwer erkennbar, dies ist eine Coverversion von Prince, Sign of the Times. Die Vocals stammen von einem MC, der sich The Space Ape nennt. Nach Sign of the Dub haben die beiden zwei weitere Coverversionen produziert: Spit, frei nach Welcome to the Torah Dome von Public Enemy, sowie Ghost Town von The Specials, das wegen fehlender Rechte wohl nie erscheinen wird. Seit der dritten Maxi, Kingstown, schreibt The Space Ape seine Texte selbst. Hier nochmal Mary Ann Hobbs von BBC Radio 1, diesmal zu der Musik von Code 9.
Again, he's sort of like, he's such a cinematic producer. He takes you to a beautiful space, and I think it's so vivid what he paints with his beats. It conjures up beautiful cinematic images of exotic. I don't even know if you, in spite of the fact that the samples he uses, like you say, are you can tell their specific location. He takes you still into a different place. It's almost like a landscape completely of his own making, and it's really vivid and beautifully coloured. And I just think, I don't know, his work has so many different dimensions to it, I think, and it's the same with Burial, you know. It's such a kaleidoscopic experience in your mind when you put the record on. It conjures so many just random images of that your mind will create on their own as a consequence of listening to what he does, and that's wonderful, you know. his imagination is so vivid, and he transposes that so brilliantly, dazzlingly well onto vinyl, whereas I think a lot of people, you can see what they're trying to achieve, but they never quite make it. And Coe can do that thing where he can flip out everything in the most fanciful areas of his imagination and actually transpose it onto vinyl, and that's a real gift, I think.
A stone will be thrown at the stage, and a stone will be thrown at the churches.
Von Code 9, erschienen auf seinem eigenen Label Hyperdub Recordings. Martin Clark hatte in einem Artikel mal erwähnt, dass Code 9 den Begriff Sino-Dub für seine Musik benutzt. Martin Clark dazu?
Code's quite good at twisting words. And one of the terms that he suggested, and he and I talked about a lot in about 2003, was Sino-Grime and Sino-Dub. So the term Sino comes from China. It's a very lazy term, I'm sure he would admit, because we use it to mean Asian, as in the UK, but what Asian means in the UK, so as in India and Pakistan and places like that, but also to mean China and even further east, like Thailand or whatever. It's lazy, I admit it's lazy, but it means stuff that's from that part of the world that's not the traditional kind of samples you get in drum and bass, like a funk sample or a James Brown sample or whatever. So people like Wanda was doing a tune called Asia, and Jammer and Wiley were working on stuff that was kind of influenced. Wiley did a tune called Shanghai and so on. And so there's a counterpart that Code developed suggesting calling one of those Sinogrime and one of those Sinodub. And to me, it's one of the most interesting strands in dubstep and grime, but it's not the most dominant.
Handelt sich bei Sinodub, also wie man dem Namen ja auch schon entnehmen kann, um Dubstep, bei dem die Samples aus dem südostasiatischen Raum kommen. Wie Martin Clark eben gesagt hat, sind sie da nicht so genau bei Sino, was ja eigentlich für Chinesisch steht, sondern meinen damit den ganzen südostasiatischen Raum, einschließlich Indien, Thailand und sogar Japan. Ich habe Code 9 auf diesen Begriff angesprochen und ihn gefragt, wie er dazu kommt, südostasiatische Samples zu benutzen. Denkbar wäre beispielsweise, dass er südostasiatische Wurzeln hat. So entstand Ende der 90er Asian Underground, eine Musikrichtung, die fast ausschließlich von Nachfahren indischer Einwandererfamilien produziert wurde. Wie ist das bei Code 9?
I mean, the main reason I use them is because the tonality of the sounds. That's the basic reason. I like the sounds. I don't know. It's complicated. What drew me to those sounds is complicated. It's a mixture of listening to lots of Chinese, Indian, Japanese music, being really into the Wu-Tang Clan in the 90s. I used to do martial arts a little bit. It's complicated. There's all kinds of reasons why I was drawn to those kind of sounds. Also the early grime tracks of everyone from Dizzy Rascal, Wiley, Jammer were doing a similar thing, often with synths, playing Chinese melodies on synths, but I was really into that as well. That's the thing about grime. For me, grime is a very complicated, diverse music, and it's usually a lot of grime is much more musical and melodic than dubstep is, and I'm attracted to the musical side of grime that's actually not that grimy, because it's done in quite a bizarre way. It sounds wrong when you hear very musical grime tracks. So I don't know, in terms of an underlying philosophy to it, I suppose I'm influenced by some kind of I don't know, the intersection of martial arts and music, which was kind of strong in drum and bass in a certain way with Fotek. You could see that influence coming through in Fotek's stuff. And I've got a similar interest in that intersection, the intersection between dance and the way when you move your body when you dance and the way you move your body when you're doing martial arts. That's always interested me.
Südostasiatische Samples tauchen nicht nur bei Code 9 auf, sondern allgemein im Dubstep hört man häufiger südostasiatische Samples. Ein anderer Künstler, der ein Stück mit einem besonders auffälligen Sample gemacht hat, ist Pinched. Sein Stück heißt Kawali und darin samplet er Kawali, eine pakistanisch-nordindische Musikform. Warum?
Yeah, I mean, it's come from Kavali music. I named that track Kavali for two reasons. One was because some of the palette of sounds had come from a Kavali context. But also, Kavali music is a very spiritual music. It's very, it's kind of deep and meditative in its own sense. Although it doesn't actually sound, I mean, Kavali music is about a lot of kind of singing and a lot of upbeat singing that is involved with it. And although that doesn't feature in the track, I think the essence of a kind of deeper sense of spirituality does, and that's at least what I was trying to achieve with the track.
Pinch ist der Mittelpunkt der bristolianischen Dubstep-Szene. Er hat das Label Tectonic gegründet, bringt seine eigenen Dubstep-Stücke auf Planet Mu raus und veranstaltet zwei Partyreihen, Dubloaded und Subloaded. Angefangen hat er vor mehreren Jahren als Drum & Bass DJ. Als Drum & Bass sich aber mehr und mehr in Richtung Jump Up entwickelte und alles sich gleich anhörte, nahm sein Interesse an dieser Musik ab. Das änderte sich erst, als er Code 9 zum ersten Mal hörte.
I went down to Forward one night. I saw Code 9 play. Forward's a key night in London. Plastic People is the original dubstep night. Well, it runs every 2 weeks now, but it used to be monthly back then. And it was the first Thursday of the month always. And I always used to go up. I started going up with some friends. We'd drive up from Bristol. And I just remember the first time I heard Code 9 playing. It just took me away. It had everything. It had the kind of the depth and the hypnotic rhythm of techno and soundscapes to kind of draw you in into that kind of depth. But it also had kind of the rhythmical innovation of jungle and just sheer bass weight and the combination of everything. I mean, I just stood dumbstruck for a whole hour listening to Code 9, just thought, this is it. This is it for me. I don't need anything else now. This is it. I found it.
Das muss Anfang 2004 gewesen sein, als Pinch Code 9 erstmals bei der Forward Club Night in London erlebt hat. Seit Anfang 2005 gibt es eine weitere wichtige Club Night in London, DMZ von Loafer und Digital Mystics. DMZ findet monatlich am ersten Samstag in einer alten Kirche in Brixton statt. Mary Ann Hobbs über ihren ersten Besuch bei DMZ.
The first DMZ that I went to absolutely changed my life. I had the same reaction as maybe you did, you know, like when I walked into the club I was just aghast and really heard the beats on a, you know, on that rig for the first time. And like you say, it was such an exquisite moment for me because I haven't felt like that in years. Like I just stood there and let the sound batter me and I had no real, like, it's like, right, okay, how do you move to this? How does your brain absorb this? And in a way, it was such a virgin experience. You'll never have it again because obviously once your brain and your ears and your body become used to it, then you lock it and it's fine. But I hadn't had that experience since the first time I ever went to a jungle club. You know, when you really, it's so arresting because you really have no idea how to respond to it. It's just amazing. And that was it for me. You know, I watched Digital Mystics and Loafer play their infamous back-to-back set, which they do at all the DMZ dances, and it absolutely blew me away. I haven't experienced anything like it in a club for like 10 years, nothing that even remotely comparable, and that was it for me. To have that kind of a reaction is really rare. I mean, that's once in a decade reaction, and I got it at DMZ, for real. It was unbelievable. We'll be right back.
Von der DMZ-Crew mit Roughage. Marianne Hobbs hat es gerade angesprochen. Eine der ersten Fragen, die man sich stellt, wenn man zum ersten Mal bei einer Dubstep-Party ist, lautet: Wie tanzt man dazu? Die Musik hört sich sehr langsam an, aber man merkt schnell, dass das täuscht. Martin Clark.
Yeah, so the suggestion of BPM is perhaps a misconception because half step at the moment, which is a style of dubstep that only uses one snare per bar, feels slow. But actually, it's much faster, or significantly faster, than UK Garage. UK Garage was around 134, which was what the speed they got to by pitching up US House to get UK Garage. So that was 134 BPM. And people like Scream and so on brought the tempo up towards 136. Then you had DJ Zinc's 138 Trek, which is a 138, and then edging upwards towards 140. Now, when people like Loafer and grime producers like Wonder pioneered the half-step style, only using one snare per bar, it feels slower, but it's actually, as terms of the length of the loops and how and the tracks it's running at, it's actually faster. So really, the idea of fast or slow is more about the density of the sounds, the number of snares, the number of shakers, how much rhythmic propulsion you get per track. As opposed to in any absolute tempo. And a lot of drum and bass people are coming now to DMZ in these kind of parties, and at first they get quite confused because they go, where's the rush? Where's the energy? You know, they've got tracks in drum and bass now about 180 BPM and the snares are flying away and the hi-hats are rammed in there. It's all technical stuff, but the vibe to anyone who experiences is really, really fast. And dubstep isn't that far away, but the vibe is much more of a skank to it. And so it's good, it's different. But you're at DMZ, right? We're recording this interview at DMZ, and the pinnacle of the DMZ party is Mala versus Loafer on the decks from Digital Mystics. Well, they have very different styles. Loafer has pioneered this ultra-minimal, hard, dark half-step style. And Mala is still very much has this up, bouncy, almost energetic, like euphoric vibe. And their tracks are made at the same speed. But when they play together back to back, they have this really down, heavy, and then up, 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 down, heavy, up, up, kind of clash. And that's what makes DMZ Party so amazing, is the climax of the night towards those two contrasts.
Night, my people. Chat mouth, this is MC Buckwild, your bossy MC. I'm about to introduce to you a brother who say he might go get big, not big, just as Bob Marley. Well, we see about that, huh?
We'll be right back.
ist einer der größten Dubstep-Hits dieser Tage, Check It, vom gerade mal 18-jährigen Scream, dessen Debütalbum soeben erschienen ist, und auf dem Debütalbum findet man auch dieses Stück. Dass Dubstep inzwischen nicht mehr auf London und England beschränkt ist, zeigen neben vielen Dubstep-Partys, die etwa in New York, Paris oder Berlin stattfinden, auch schon erste Künstler aus anderen Bereichen, die auf Dubstep aufmerksam geworden sind. So haben Fat Freddy's Drop aus Neuseeland Digital Mystics um einen Remix gebeten. Dieses Stück hören wir zum Schluss dieser Sendung. Am Mikrofon war Markus Mark. Vielen Dank für die Interviews an Mary Ann Hobbs, Finch, Rob Smith, Code 9, Meller und Martin Clark. Vor Fat Freddy's Drop aber nochmal zurück zu John Peel. Ich habe Mary Ann Hobbs gefragt, ob sie auch der Meinung ist, dass Dubstep eine der letzten Entdeckungen John Peels ist.
Yeah, very much so. I think so. I mean, to be honest, it's funny because, you know, when we were at the Digital Mystics first birthday party where the venue had to switch up, myself and Hermit, who worked very closely with John Peel, he was like John Peel's right-hand man for several years before he died, we stood and we cried in that venue. We drank vodka shots and cried, and we just said, oh, God, you know, isn't it a shame that Peel didn't get to see this, because this was his next moment, really. This was his. And it's such a pity that he isn't here. But, you know, you hope that he's sitting on a cloud at the right hand of God somewhere, you know, staring over the chaos, the carnage at Mass, and just nodding as he would do, you know, approvingly at all the skanking going on down there. I'm sure he would have loved it.
So long I've been gone, so many things have changed, but I know where I belong, and I know when I reach that place. Oh, I know when I reach that place. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see the rain come down while the sun is shining. I see them dancing to the night. See the rain come down, the sun is shining. I see the rain come down while the sun is shining. I see them dancing to the night. See the rain come down, the sun is shining. I see them dancing to the night.